It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in to the Second Amendment Radio Show. We like to call it 2A Radio. Today's show is going to be all about long-range precision rifles. Now, if you are a hunter and you have a rifle with the proper caliber and the ability to hit, if the gun and equipment you've got, your gear, has the ability to hit at several hundred yards, this is appropriate for you as well. Precision rifle shooting is not necessarily just a heavy-barreled sniper rifle the way it is normally thought of. It's also for those hunters that have a good enough firearm, a good enough gun with good enough hunting ammo to still keep at roughly 1 minute of angle. That is 1 inch for every 100 yards shooting a three-shot group. So at 100 yards, if you can shoot 3 rounds, and 1 inch or better, it's a precision rifle. If you're a hunter and you can keep about a minute and a half, that's 1.5 inches with 3 rounds at 100 yards, that's good too. This is all going to be helpful to all of you. As well, keep in mind, it's 1 inch per 100 yards. It's actually 1.047, if I remember a minute of angle right off the top of my head. 1.047 inches per 100 yards. So we just round that down to one inch per 100 yards. That means at 400 yards, 4-inch group. At 800 yards, 8-inch group. You've got to have the gun and the ammunition capable of doing that. Generally, the factor that's going to keep the groups from being able to get that tight is going to be poor ammunition, or just ammunition that's not really optimized for your gun. And I'm bringing all of this up because April 15th, 16th, and 17th of this year, 2011, we're going to have the 2A Radio Bill Carnes Precision Rifle Course, 3-day course. You're going to get, in 3 days, what most people will get at any other school you might go to and take 4 to 5 days worth of this training. Now, this is getting your gear, your ammunition, and all of your data dead on out to the end of your bullet's trajectory in your gun. If you've got a rifle that mics out to where it's going to be able to shoot and hit as far as 1,200 yards, you will have data from 100 yards out to 1,200 yards in your book in 50-yard increments. And you will have actual, honest-to-God data in your data book, which I will provide to you when you come to the course. I'll provide to you a data book, show you everything about how to fill it out, how it works, and you will be able to have repeatable data. Now, this is much better than somebody just running a ballistic sheet, say like an X-ball sheet. We run those as well. But the thing is these ballistic data sheets don't always tell the entire story. I'll give you, for instance, I'm going to talk about this throughout the show. About 10 days ago, I get a call from a buddy of mine, and I met him when he was one of my students, and we become friends, and he calls me and he says, look, I've got this precision rifle all set up, brand new. I fired like 10 rounds just to know that it works, but I've got this whole thing set up. I need to get everything set up on this deal and get the scope mounted on there. I've got the rail on there. I need to get everything set up, and then I want to have data marked every 50 yards out to 1,000 yards. Okay, so we struck up an agreement, made a deal, and he came out this weekend. We spent 2 days together gathering a lot of data. I still have more data to go because it takes some time to do, and the way that we are doing this was just kind of a one-on-one. We didn't have multiple targets set up, just one target. When we do the course in April, we're going to have multiple targets set up, and there's going to be a whole lot more shooting and a whole lot less traveling. it's going to be much more efficient than any precision or any real-life rifle class that you've been gathering data that you may have ever had anywhere else before. Anyhow, point being that we ran the data sheets. We chronographed the rounds, did all the measurements, ran the data sheets for my buddy's gun. And when it came down to it, getting out to 550 yards and beyond, the data sheets are so far, and we haven't finished getting as far out as we need to get. So far, they are 1 minute of angle off, starting at 550 yards. So that'll tell you that you can't just run some sort of computer program after making some measurements, taking some measurements off of your rifle, chronographing the round and saying, okay, I got all the information I need. It doesn't work like that. As a matter of fact, I have never in my life yet seen a gun that you chronograph, take the measurements, run any sort of a ballistic data sheet, and that data sheet is accurate all the way through. There are always inaccuracies. Therefore, shooting the rifle and the data sheet that you're able to print out, that ballistic data sheet, that will get you in the ballpark. That will get you close. And then as you start seeing the data sheet falling off to the wayside and seeing that the actual data that you're collecting, shooting on paper at distance, once you see that coming in, you start to see a trend of where to go when it comes to adjustments on your scope, adjustments on your shooting. So that ballistic data sheet, the computer programs, the X-Balls, the things like that, they work really good, again, up to a point until you go out to confirm that data, and then that is your hard data book to go off of. That's what we're going to be doing at the April course. Now, to learn more about the course and to sign up for it, go to victoryshoot.org. Victoryshoot.org. I announced it on Friday. A third of the seats are already gone. A third of the reservations are already done. It's right out here, just outside of Las Vegas. All the information is on victoryshoot.org. If there's anything else you need, you can certainly send me an email, bill@2aradio.com. And there's also, I believe there's an email link on that website, on victoryshoot.org as well. Point being that a third of the seats are already gone. If you're really interested in this, then go on there. If you happen to have a rifle, but you need to get a scope, or you need to get rings, or you need to get a scope base, any of that stuff, all the information's at victoryshoot.org on what you need. And you don't have to put all that stuff on yourself. You can come out one day early, and I have all of the tools, all the specialty tools, and the skills, and all of the background to be able to set your rifle up perfectly. So it works in the course. You're not scrambling to put gear on. You're not scrambling for trying to figure out how to do it. You're not scrambling for torque specs. You're not scrambling for specialized tools. If you happen to have a gunsmith that you can take your rifle to get all that stuff on there, even that much better, because then you can have experience with the gun a little bit before you get out here. And if there's any equipment problems, you need to reorder something, maybe it was a wrong scope base, you have the time to do it. We're going to carry on with this discussion after the break, guys. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Hi guys, welcome back to the show. So we're talking about precision rifles. Now, I have a formula for essentially cold lapping a brand new rifle barrel. Now, here's the reason that people will lap a barrel. What that means is getting any little imperfections from the machining process of the barrel handled. You've got the barrel, and then cut into the barrel, you have the grooves for the rifling. When you cut into those grooves, as you cut into anything, if you cut into a piece of wood with a circular saw, you're going to see some little shards of wood come up on either side of the blade. Same sort of thing happens with the rifling grooves that are cut into a barrel. And it doesn't matter if it's button rifled or if it's machined in. It doesn't matter what the technique is. There will be little tiny microscopic shards that are in there. Now, keep in mind that they wash these things out. They will usually power wash them with an oil to get most of that stuff out. But there's still some little stuff in there. So people do lapping, and there's all kinds of lapping procedures. However many rifles there are in the world, there's somebody's got a different lapping procedure. And a lot of it is fire one round and then clean the living hell out of the gun, and then fire another round and clean the living hell out of the gun. And you might do that like for the first 20 rounds. Then it shoot five rounds and clean the hell out of it. Shoot five rounds. Let me tell you what I have found that works. I initially did this with my rifle. Now, my rifle, I have just had about 860 rounds through a precision rifle. When I first put the rifle together, I could fire a three-round group in a 3/16-inch group. Three rounds in 3/16 of an inch, measuring center to center. Now, 860 rounds later, I have my group has opened up to about 3/8 of an inch. So I am well sub-minute of angle, well below 1 inch at 100 yards. And this is with, you know, my gun, match grade ammo, decent conditions. So I will give you my very simple, secret, non-shooting formula to lapping the barrel. Those little tiny shards, if you will, from the rifling process. You have some on the chamber side of the groove and some on the bore side of the groove. So if you start shooting, what happens is the little shards on the chamber side start to push into the actual rifling cuts. The ones on the bore side of the cut start pushing into the actual smoother part of the barrel itself, where you're going to have the casing of the bullet actually scraping across it, pushing it into the actual bore itself. So you want to get rid of that stuff. This is my procedure. I take the bolt out of the gun or open it up if it's a semi-auto. Works for any gun. Put a bore guide in there. Take a one-piece coated guide rod. Push it all the way through from the chamber end to where the tip of the bore guide is actually the cleaning rod, rather, is all the way out the front of the bore at the muzzle end. Put on from there, you want to take one of these caliber-specific cotton or wool mops, cleaning mops for your gun. They're about, I don't know, inch and a half, 2 inches long. What you want to do is you want to get, and what I use is JB Bore Bright. You get that out of Brownells, JB Bore Bright. The stuff is kind of a pinkish red, if you will. And that is specifically made for polishing the bore. If there's other bore polishes out there, that's fine. And I'm not using JB Bore Paste, that's a cleaner. It's JB Bore Bright, which is actually a polish. And I embed that. I put a glove on, like a, you know, surgical glove, or even you can get a Q-tip and use it, and rub that, embed it into the bore mop that you've got. And I don't put it a half inch, I leave it clean a half inch before you get to the tip of the mop and a half inch before the base of the mop. Or maybe even just a quarter inch. I don't want this stuff all the way to the tip of the bore mop, and I don't want it all the way to the base of the mop. I want it in the middle. And I embed the stuff in there. I really rub it into the bore mop. From there, screw that onto the one-piece cleaning rod that you've got, and I run 50 full pass strokes. Pull it all the way back to where it just clears the chamber, push it all the way forward to where it starts to clear the muzzle. That is a single full pass. Go all the way back, go all the way forward. That is a full pass. It's like when you do a lap on a racetrack. You have to go all the way around for it to be one lap. So all the way back, all the way forward is one lap. I do that 50 times, 5-0, 50 times. Now, the polish that's getting in there is starting to polish away these little microbursts that are all over the rifling. It starts to get rid of them. They go back, they go forth. They're working them back and forth. Like if you take a paper clip, you hold it in one hand, the other hand you grab the tip, and you start bending it back and forth, back and forth. It'll eventually break off. That's what you are doing to all the microburrs that are created, that are left over from the rifle cutting process in your brand new barrel. So, 50 full pass strokes. Then push it all the way through so that the mop is sitting out of the barrel at the end of the muzzle. Take it off. Pull your cleaning rod out. wipe it down, clean it off with just, I don't know, a towel of some kind. You just need to wipe it off. Then you want to get yourself a nylon brush, nylon boar brush. I'm sorry, you don't want to get that yet. My mistake. You now want to get your cleaning solvent, whatever you use, just a generic cleaning solvent. Nothing too harsh, nothing too brash. I like to use something usually like a thicker gel of sorts, like an M-Pro 7 boar cleaner is good because there's not really any chemicals. You could use a Sweet 7.62. I guess you could use some of the thinner stuff like the Shooter's Choice. I like the thicker stuff because it doesn't start to pool with gravity towards the bottom of the barrel. I will put another mop or even a slotted tip onto the end of the cleaning rod and put a patch in it. Now, I run the cleaning rod all the way through, get the patch or the mop, or if you use those felt bore plugs, get those not saturated, but get them pretty wet with the cleaning solvent that you're going to use. Screw that on as the cleaning rod is all the way sticking out the end of the bore. Screw on that tip, and then run that cleaning solvent back and forth, in and out, full passes, inside the barrel, about 15 times or so, and let that stuff soak. Push the rod all the way through, take the whatever you're using, a slotted tip or a bore mop, whatever it is, off at the muzzle, so you're pulling the rod out clean. It's not bringing all of the, you don't want to pull anything all the way through the back of the gun and get any of the solvents or liquids or anything back around the chamber area and dripping into the action. Wipe off your rod. Then you put on a nylon brush. I don't use metal of any kind. And people say, well, you know, bronze brushes and brass brushes are softer than the steel of your rifle. Well, here's what I say. The hardest surface we know is a diamond, and diamonds get scratched up just through day use on jewelry. So I don't trust that. Well, you know, it's not going to scratch up the harder steel in your bore. Use a nylon brush. The best brushes I've come across are by Iosso, I-O-S-S-O. They're blue. They're perfectly fitted to the chamber. If not, any old nylon bore brush will work. You don't have to go with the Iosso. Then you want to run that through the barrel about 15 or 20 times to loosen up all the JB bore paste that you're trying to get out. Then you start running patches through the bore and get it to where it's all clean. Then you start the process over. You do the entire process three times. So you have 150 full pass strokes in the bore, or 300 individual times through it. Your barrel is cold lapped. You don't need to go firing and cleaning, firing and cleaning. The entire process takes about an hour. And you're saving all of that ammunition as well. So that's my source, my way of cold lapping, non-firing a barrel. It works wonderfully. I've done it to dozens of guns who have all had superior accuracy and continue to keep that accuracy. So the proof is in the pudding downrange. Did it work? Every single time I've had access to a gun and we fired it afterwards, it's worked wonderfully. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. It's Precision Rifle Day right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, folks, so in a nutshell, you just got my formula for cold lapping a brand new barrel. And you can do that to any rifle that you've got. Really unnecessary in a handgun. They're not a precision instrument. But there you go. If you want more details on that, shoot me an email. I'll see if I can help, or maybe I'll do another segment on it outlining a little bit more detail. Now, here's the other thing. If you have a high-end hunting rifle or precision rifle, you want to spend some money on the proper cleaning equipment. It's an investment. It really, truly is an investment. It's like buying a Ferrari and putting white walls from Big O on it. You're not going to get the performance, you're not going to get the longevity, and you're not going to get everything out of your car. It's not going to last that long. What you want to do is get yourself some nice, properly fitted, high-end sport radials. That's what you would put onto a Ferrari. Everybody knows that. Same thing with a Corvette. You know, you want to put some good high-end, like, you know, Eagle GSR1 something something. I guess it'd be the F1 Eagle, properly sized, properly speed-rated handling tires on your Corvette. You don't want to put white walls on it. Same thing with the Jeep. You want to get some good off-road tires. If you're going to go four-wheeling, it's not the Jeep that does all of it. You got to have the tires to help out. You have to have proper cleaning gear and proper techniques. About 70 to 85% of the wear of a barrel, about 4 out of 5 slices of the wear pie on your barrel, come from the combination of either neglect, improper cleaning, improper chemicals, improper technique, improper tools when it comes to keeping the gun clean. So, there is proper methods. There are proper methods to cleaning, and there are proper tools to cleaning. There's proper chemistry to cleaning. I've actually written a precision rifle cleaning guide, and I'm trying to get pictures so it's also illustrated through the whole thing, but it's going to be a lot of pictures. The guide itself, just with the written words and the explanation explaining some of the metallurgy and some of the chemistry involved so everybody understands what's going on, it's 7 pages. I just finished doing a little bit of an update to it a couple of nights ago. So, you want to have all the right stuff. The proper gear, everything that you're going to need, is going to run you around $350 for all the proper cleaning gear. Now, keep in mind, some of that stuff is disposable things, like you're using up some of the patches, using up some of the bore plugs, using up some of the chemistry. However, there's a lot of things, the actual rod, the jags, the attachments, all of that stuff that you don't need to replace. If you have, say, several guns in 270 or several guns in 308, you only need one kit. It handles all of them. So, in a lot of the things, let's say that you've got a 270, 308, and a 30-06. If you get the one-piece cleaning rod, which is caliber-specific for the 270, it will work with the 308 and the 30-06, the 30-caliber guns. It'll work for that. It's not perfect, but it works rather really well. You're not going to have a problem with it. Just got to realize that as the bore size opens, that rod can bend and flex a little bit more, which is why you get a caliber specific, caliber appropriate cleaning rod, caliber appropriate many things. So anyhow, you want to spend the proper money on that. At the Precision Rifle course that we're putting together April 15th, 16th, 17th here, out here in Southern Nevada, just outside of Las Vegas near Pahrump, Nevada, on our own private new range, what we're going to have is a rifle cleaning course. We're going to show you how to, I will be showing you how to field clean your rifle. If you're out there in the field, it's getting dirty, you need to clean it. How to field clean your rifle, and it's about a 5-minute process or maybe even a little less. Then I will teach you how to detail clean your rifle. And when you detail clean your rifle, how that works. And the way I do this for dramatic effect is I will field clean my own personal rifle. My rifle will have, you know, 20, 25 rounds to it. I will field clean it in front of everybody until it shows, hey, yeah, it looks like it's clean. I'm pulling clean patches. Great. Then I will detail clean it, and you'll see all the extra stuff that comes out after it was already field cleaned. And people are generally then rather amazed. Then I have my own way of curing the barrel after the cleaning process to make sure that there's nothing residual, no residual chemicals or dirt or anything in there. I have my own special way of doing that. And you can see the last little bit of the different chemicals and cleaning solutions that are used that actually push out of the barrel that most people have no idea even exist in there. All of that can equal up to different pressures and different problems with accuracy, or rather lack thereof. So a lot of things that you'll learn in this. Now, when my buddy came out this weekend, he comes out, brings out his rifle. It's a brand new rifle built on a Remington 700 action. And he's got a barrel that it's huge. It's like 2 inches thick, and it tapers down to like 1.5 inches. It's threaded at the end. It's got a big muzzle brake. The gun itself is heavy. It's got to be about 14.5, 15, 16 pounds maybe. It's heavy. But it's only got a 20-inch barrel. Now, the shorter the barrel, the less velocity you have. The less velocity you have, you can't get as far with your shots. I prefer a 24 to 26 inch barrel on a 308 if you're using it as a precision rifle. If you cut it down to 20 inches, my feeling on it is you need to make sure that your barrel has a little bit tighter twist rate. Like instead of a 1 in 12, you have a 1 in 10 or even a 1 in 9. Because then you can shoot the heavier bullets. What you want, if you have a 308, you should easily, with a precision 308, the right gun, the right ammo, base, scope, rings, all the right gear on it, you should be able to easily get out predictably to 1,000 yards. Predictably. Repeatably. Okay? You should be able to repeat that. So, out to 1,000 yards. If you have a shorter barrel down to 20 inches, you need to have a tighter twist rate in the barrel so that you can run heavier bullets. Now, I run a 168 grain Sierra Boattail hollow point. That's the bullet that goes through my gun. And it has a muzzle velocity of 2,682 feet per second. Now, my buddy that came over, he has a 20-inch barrel. We chronographed his rounds, 2,602 feet per second. So mine are 80 feet per second faster. But he's shooting a 175 grain bullet, 7 grains heavier. If it's heavier, it's going to go further. It's going to take a little bit longer to get there initially, but then it's going to be the same on the far end because the lighter bullet's going to slow down a little quicker. The heavier bullet's going to catch up because it decelerates at a slower speed. It doesn't decelerate quite as rapidly. So as it turns out, his ballistics and mine are almost identical to where my round goes subsonic right at 1,150 yards. Well, running the same basic information on his gun, he also goes subsonic at 1,150 yards. So if you get a tighter twist rate so you can shoot the heavier bullets, then you can get more distance. I know a guy who's got a 24-inch barreled 308 that's got a very tight 1 in 8 twist, which is pretty unusual. And he shoots a 185 grain boattail hollow point match grade Sierra. And he's actually able to get out to about 1,300, maybe even a little bit longer, with a 308. And he's very good at it. Brews up his own rounds. He's got the perfect brew for his rounds. The right casings, the right primer, the right powder, the right bullets, seated to the right depth. He's really got it down. And his rifle is supremely accurate with these rounds that he's brewed up. Using the heavier bullets, he can get a little further. He could go with the shorter barrel as well. Anyhow, more info after the break. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on! I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Hey guys, welcome back. So, we're talking about precision rifles today. So, my buddy comes out, we've got his gun, we've got the ammo, we get everything put together on the gun. We got the bases already mounted, we get the scope rings on there, get everything leveled, the scope is on there, it's all perfect. It's a loopholed, Mark IV with the mil-dot reticle. Perfect scope, put it all on there. Go, we start shooting this thing. Get it all dialed in. And every 50 yards, we're doing three-round groups, collecting the data. We get as far out on the first day as 500 yards. So the second day, we plan on going all the way up to 1,000 yards. As it turns out, the weather got really bad. Really, really windy. And unfortunately, the wind was completely in our face to the point where we got the 550-yard shots done. We got all that cataloged. And then we got the 600-yard shots done. After that, we were done. The wind was blowing so much, and we end up out here in the desert, that we had enough dust out in the area where we were. There was some construction going on, so there's a lot of loose dust out in the area where we were. We ended up not being able to actually see the target. Now, with the wind blowing essentially straight at us, it wasn't that big a deal. It's what you call a zero-value wind. It will slow the bullet down very, very little. It's got almost no... It's negligible, the amount of slowing that the bullet has. It's negligible when it comes to distance. However, we couldn't see the target anymore, so we couldn't finish. However, we already have data out to 600 yards, so we'll be going out and collecting the rest of this data hopefully sometime this week. It also ended up raining last night, so it's a little bit moist out now. And today there's a low pressure system has moved in. So today it's cool and quite windy. And it looks like we're going to have a little bit more rain in the next couple of days. So it might be next weekend before we're able to get out there and collect the last of the data. However, the data is going to be repeatable for this guy for his gun. He bought a lot of the same ammo. He's got a couple thousand rounds of this very specific match-grade ammo that he's got. He happened to get Black Hills with 175-grain, Molly-coated boat-tail hollow point. I think it's a Sierra bullet. Now, when it comes to the Molly, this particular guy is he's a wise guy. He does a lot of reading. However, people can talk him into some things he doesn't really need to have. Here's the thing with Molly coating. Molly is a molybdenum. It's actually coating that can go over the bullet that helps it kind of go smoothly through the bore. Considering barrel technology, metallurgy, and the way barrels are being made now, Molly's pretty well outdated. We don't need it anymore. But some people still swear by it. They want it, the nice, slick, smooth surface going through the bore. It's really unnecessary. And here's the thing. A lot of people don't seem to understand the purpose behind Molly. Molly is on the bullet, but it comes off of the bullet without too much effort. It's designed to coat the bore. When you coat the bore, you should not end up with any copper fouling in the bore. You get copper in the bore, you get carbon in the bore. Once that happens, the only thing you should have to clean in a perfect world when it comes to molly-coated bullets, if you're shooting them through your rifle and that's all you're shooting, just molly-coated bullets, all you should have to clean, theoretically, is the carbon residue that builds up. And you shouldn't have to do that often. You should be able to just run a bore snake through it. And just so you understand, when I use a bore snake in my precision rifle, before I run it through, I take the brush out because it is a brass brush. I kind of pull the weave a little bit. I'm talking with my hands in the microphone like you could see. I pull the weave out a little bit, usually use a couple of small needle nose pliers to do it, and then loosen it up some so I can get the one or two brushes that are in tandem, depending on, you know, which model you get of the bore snake. Sometimes there's one longer brush. Sometimes there's two smaller ones in tandem. Pull them out. Get rid of them. You don't need that. So the thing is, when cleaning a precision rifle, when shooting molly-coated bullets, you want to leave the molly in the bore. That's what it's for. Everybody, it doesn't seem like too many people really understand that. They like to try to clean the molly out. Well, if you clean the molly out, then you're starting from scratch. You're not getting the benefit of molly if it's not building in the bore. Okay? Molly on molly is what you're looking for. That has that gets you what the molly is all about. The molybdenum is all about. It's kind of a gunmetal gray looking coating. It's not a Teflon. It's molybdenum. It would be like a smoother Teflon sort of thing if you want to try to relate that to a more common product than Teflon as opposed to moly. But you want to end up trying to, with a moly barrel, just clean the carbon out and leave the moly there. What I have found for that is M-Pro 7 makes a product. It's just an M-Pro 7 carbon cleaner. And that seems to get the carbon out without disturbing the moly coating. And it's water soluble. It doesn't have a bunch of harsh chemicals, but that seems to work. So if you're shooting moly bullets, you don't need to. But if you do, if you don't clean the moly out, it's designed to be in the bore. You have moly on moly. So anyhow, 2 cents worth of moly information for you right there over the last couple of minutes. When we were out shooting this weekend, it was good times. It's always a good time to go out there with a buddy and start getting gear, get things sighted in, and when you can literally put down range. I had a 3-round group when the barrel really started coming to. We're shooting at 500 yards, probably got about 50 rounds through the gun. About every 15 rounds or so, we're just running a bore snake through it, letting the moly build up. By the time we got to 500 yards, we had a 1.5-inch group. 1.5 inches. As a matter of fact, two of the bullets were touching. One of them was just about 1.25 inches from there. So 1.5-inch group at 500 yards. Now, if you're not quite sure how far 500 yards is, it's about 1/3 of a mile. It's a lot further than what if you were looking at somebody 500 yards away, you might be able to tell what color shirt they were wearing and maybe what shade of pants, but it's kind of difficult. You're talking a long distance off. 500 yards is 5 football fields minus the end zones laid end to end to end to end to end. That's 500 yards. So a 1.5-inch group, that's about the size of someone's nose. So you can get an idea of just how accurate a gun with the proper bullet combination truly is. And again, I cannot underestimate what bullet weight does for you. You want to have the proper bullet weight for the twist rate of the barrel. I shoot a 168 grain bullet. My bullet stops traveling predictably at 1150 yards. As it turns out, with my scope and scope base, I run out of adjustment 1150 yards as well. Now, I have some 175 grain bullets. I've never test fired. I've never tried. However, I'm going to. I'm going to see if my gun likes the 175s as well. If it works out, maybe someday I'll switch to 175s. I can get a scope base. I have 20 minutes of angle built into the scope base. I could always replace it with one with 30 minutes of angle. Therefore, I could dope out even further. If I end up shooting heavier bullets, it'd go a little bit further. Right now, my brew is wonderful. I have a whole bunch of predictability, very, very predictable shot patterns at distance. I've got the data books. I've got all the information that I need. I even have a little cheater card that I keep in the little pouch on the side of my gun. All of these sorts of things are things you'll learn about and things you'll actually do at this rifle class if you happen to be able to come out and make it out to Vegas April 15th, 16th, 17th of this year. Go to victoryshoot.org, read up a little bit more. The course, it's 3 days long, and I am charging essentially about 1/3 of what most people charge, even half of the cut rate guys, at $300. It's $100 a day to come out and take this class. Now, there's a couple of different ways you can pay for it. You can either go online and click right there and pay for it up front in full, and you are absolutely reserved and paid up, ready to go for the course. If you can't manage the $300 right now, you can put a $100 deposit down to reserve your spot. The balance is due in about 7 weeks, the middle of March, by March 15th, 30 days before the class. If the balance isn't paid by then, you forfeit your deposit, because then I use that $100 to start advertising actively on the internet to try to find people to fill up those spaces. Now, if I'm able to get people to fill up those spaces, then the $100 can be applied towards a future course, or I might even be able to send you a refund from there. But it's not unless someone actually is able to fill up your spot. So go to victoryshoot.org, check it out, learn all the information, send me an email if you like, and I'll be back tomorrow.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not.